Namaste. Okay, today we begin month 11 of the Yoga of Entrepreneurship Satsang, Cultivating Detachment. So this is a big one. I believe that actually that cultivating detachment is the single most valuable thing that an entrepreneur can do. Okay, that's a big statement. But you'll see as I talk today why I believe that or have come to believe that through my own experience with it. Cultivating detachment is really the spiritual practice of a lifetime. Not something you get once. So it's not something that you get once and then you're done. It's an ongoing practice, and probably the most challenging thing that we ask of ourselves, both as humans and as business owners. And honestly, it's really the aim of all the practices of yoga. Because with detachment comes true freedom. Freedom from, you know, all of our muck, all of our patterns. Freedom from all of the conditions that we put on our lives because we're attached to, quote, looking good or being, you know, a certain form of ourselves or what we have learned and taken on as, quote, successful or anything else, really, about how we live and that we get attached to. Anything else that we could stand there and say, I can't be happy unless. Or I'm not good enough unless, or I won't be satisfied unless. Okay? Detachment unhooks us from all of that. And it hands to us in that the freedom of being present in the moment as things are. So take a minute, and I ask you to think of a time when you were wholly present. Okay, wholly, wholly focused and just present in the moment for someone or something. And I ask you, were you attached to any outcome, you know, or any personal gratification at that time, aside from what you were experiencing in the moment? Sometimes we experience these moments as like time slowing down, or being in another dimension, or sometimes we call them surreal. They can happen at times for us of, ironically, almost a heightened emotional experience, or when we need to take charge, we need to get out of our own way and take charge of something. So, you know, on both ends of the emotional spectrum, they can take place in catastrophe, trauma, and they can take place in immense joy. There's something about the intensity of that I've witnessed that pulls us right into the moment, that snatches our mind away from its everyday chatter and its thoughts about itself, self, itself, ourselves, 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 and makes us focus on what's really going on right now, because we have to be. So you may have experienced it that way. You may have experienced it a bit differently. But you probably were not in these moments thinking about anything else except for what was happening right then and what needed to happen right then. So I say to you this, you know, recalling that experience, that detachment is our doorway to freedom. And I'll read to you a little bit from my guru's book about what she says about attachment. You go through life either consuming the world or being consumed by it. If you are attached, then whatever happens in life takes up all the space in your heart and mind. This is how attachment eats up your life or consumes it. When you learn to consume life, you take control of your own heart and your own mind, even in the chaos of life. You learn to use any experience, negative or positive, as fuel for your journey. As you learn to consume the world, you begin to experience your life more fully. You learn to grow from your experiences. And most important, you discover you can let go. Once you can consume this world, you are free. So she equates detachment to allowing us to, or describes it as allowing us to, quote, consume the world. And she uses this paradigm or this analogy or phrase quite often, that you're either you either consume the world or you're consumed by it. Other spiritual teachers have talked about it that way too. Swami Rudrananda has written a whole book called Spiritual Cannibalism. Sounds kind of harsh, but that's really, it's about how do we use practices for growth, to consume them, digest them, transform them. Gosh, I'm really stumbling over my words today. How do we transform them so that they become fuel to open us up to more peace, to more equanimity, and to more freedom? So I started with the word detachment and this month is about detachment, but detachment is not cold. So let's talk about some of the misunderstandings that we sometimes have about that word. Detachment is actually unconditional love. Okay, that's another phrase that you can put in your understanding of what detachment is when you're asking for it. It's asking for you to unconditionally be present and open and loving, to be able to meet the moment and the circumstance exactly as it is, whatever's happening, whatever you're feeling, and not ask to change it immediately. So detachment is knowing really that it's okay, that you're okay. That what's happening might be challenging, but that you are at the center of it all, truly grounded, and it's okay. And the last piece that detachment is loving the act of your work more than the results of your work. So this month we're going to be talking a lot about detaching from the results of our actions, detaching from the goals of success in our business, attaching from needing a specific outcome of the work that we put into and the strategy that we put into the growth of our businesses. Cultivating detachment in this way is a cornerstone of how I do business, and I believe it's the way to get out of the way, okay, to get out of your own way so that your work comes through you and your business is truly a vehicle for the expression of your soul. This is very, very challenging. I'm not making light of it or insinuating that I'm asking myself and you to do something that's easy. As I said, it's the spiritual work of a lifetime. And honestly, I came to it the hard way. I think I may have shared this with you before, that really, I had to learn detachment. I had to. It was a prerogative for survival because things simply didn't work out. I mean, they just really didn't work in my business as I planned. I was a great planner, always been a great planner. And honestly, prior to being an entrepreneur, it was like I felt like that's all I needed. I just needed a plan. I was like, oh, I didn't even need much of a plan. I just needed a goal even. You know, I was effective at maybe what some people would call manifesting things. I'd determine what I wanted, okay? And if it was authentic, right, if it was kind of an authentic desire, I achieved it pretty damn easily. when I was 13, I thought I was going to Princeton, the only college I applied to. I got in early and I went. I mean, my parents were like, oh my God, I can't believe she, that just came out of her mouth. Nobody does that. Nobody says, I'm going to Princeton, and just goes. It's not the way it works. You know, and in law school, I said, oh, I'm going to be on law review. Okay. Yeah. I was not number one in my class, but I was on law review. Like I just, it was like, I knew it was going to happen. And honestly, every job I set out to get, I got, without a lot of strife or struggle. And unfortunately, the irony of that was that most of them, I really have to confess, I hated. Okay, once I got them, I hated it. All of them seemed to be a mismatch. So I tell you all this because up to being an entrepreneur, it felt to me like achievement was easy, right? I wanted something. I thought it was good for me. It seemed to match up. And it was like, boom. It happened. And I'm like, I don't even know how that happened. I mean, I took some steps, but it seemed like everything naturally lined up. But then when I got there to what I proclaimed that I wanted, I was miserable. I mean, in my professional life, I wasn't miserable in college, but my professional life. So there I was. Achievement was easy. Goal meeting was fairly easy, quote. But happiness was really elusive. I mean, I experienced depression, frustration, anger, all kinds of stress, bodily pain, body pain, chronic pain. And then when I started my own business, it's like everything changed. And this achievement that I was used to setting a goal for and knowing how to get there and being successful at getting there, that dynamic, that paradigm for me went away. Okay, this kind of achievement by which I set a goal and hit it suddenly became very, very, very hard. In fact, suddenly became like impossible. Like that wasn't the way the world worked for me anymore. I found that, you know, success, quote, didn't come to me that way at all, let alone satisfaction. I found that in my business, I couldn't achieve through hard work alone. I couldn't achieve through credentials. You know, and I couldn't will or white knuckle it, right? Like working harder, getting tighter about it and sitting down, buckling down, quote, just was not getting me to what I wanted in my business, which was both some sense of ease, right, and satisfaction to feel like I was really living up to what I knew I had to give, kind of carrying out, you know, my purpose, why am I here? And also, you know, I wanted financial stability, financial success. And I wasn't getting that through any of the kind of achievement-oriented approaches that I knew very, very well and had been the basis of kind of my existence up to this part and to my, quote, success and relative, you know, achievement-oriented satisfaction to that point. And it was really, really hard to fail, you know, really for the first time. I mean, sure, there were other failures in my life where I, quote, didn't achieve as, which I'm characterizing as I didn't achieve as much prior to that, but they were kind of minor really in the scope of things. I mean, my brother used to say to me, yeah, so your failure is like getting a B+ and that's other people's success. So they were kind of minor. And so it was really, really challenging to seriously fail and not feel like I had any traction, any skills set for that experience at 35. You know, I've been reading about entrepreneurs a lot lately, reading books by them and whatnot. And one of the characteristics that people are pulling out is successful entrepreneurs' ability to fail. And that they're starting to track that there were failures early on in life, so that there was a resilience and kind of a problem-solving piece that came up for them, or the skill set that they developed around this, you know, prior to having entered entrepreneurship. And so in some ways, that was not true for me. It was almost the opposite. And so it was perhaps harder, I guess I should say, or it hit me in the face what I really needed to do, which was change my approach. And the way that I did it was to say, what is it that's making me tight? What is it that is wanting me to knuckle through? And what happens if I let go of that? Now, it sounds very elegant, and it sounds very yogini-esque. But it actually was perhaps harder to witness, okay, that there was really no direct correlation at this point in my business early on, I'd say in year two maybe, between my efforts and any results I was getting. Okay, there was not a one-to-one correlation. Things did not happen in a straight line. This is probably no surprise to any of you. But somewhere I was still always expecting to be rewarded for my efforts. Okay, I was always expecting that my marketing efforts in particular would be rewarded. And so I had to let that go. So here's what happened. I started seeing that, you know, first, my law practice did better financially in the parts of the year when I did not market, okay, when I did not intentionally market. And what I mean is I didn't go through the content marketing. I was content marketing for my law business early on. And actually, even till relatively recently, probably, let's see, probably up through 2013, maybe the beginning of 2014. But in 2012, 2013, and 2014, I noticed, or in 2012 and 2013, I noticed that there was, that the content marketing was having minimal impact, okay, on my engaging clients. It's minimal impact on where my clients came from. And it took a lot of time, and I was engaging more clients, attracting more clients, and engaging more clients in the part of the year where I had said, oh my God, I cannot do this anymore. It is taking way too much of my energy. I'm completely depleted. I hate it. I hate my life. I hate my business. I hate the people who are reading these blog posts. Like, I mean, I didn't even know them, but you know what I mean? Like, that's how bad it got. Like, that's how negative I got about it. So I started to notice that I was doing better when I was not doing certain things that I had been expecting to be rewarded for. Okay. Number two, I started noticing that nothing I did, okay, marketing, follow-up, seasonal pricing. I even went to seasonal pricing one time to encourage people to work with me in the times of the year where very few people worked. Nothing I did, none of these strategies, changed the patterns of when clients invest in legal work. Okay? So, I was like, wow, I am so not in control here. I mean, I feel completely helpless about this, even though I have done the good entrepreneurial strategic thing and tried to figure out what the problem is and tried to figure out what a solution is. And coming from that place, that strategic mind place, nothing changes that. And the third thing that I started noticing was that clients came to me from places other than where I directed my marketing efforts. So again, this underscored for me that there was not this one-to-one action and reward relationship that I somehow expected again and again and again. And I got caught in this. I cannot tell you how many times and for how many years, multiple years. 3 to 4 years of my law practice, which is now 6 years old. So a good proportion of it. Okay. So in other words, very few people where I was directing my efforts, you know, very few people from my mailing list, from, you know, with whom I'd initially met, you know, who had inquired, but who did not immediately invest. So there was also this phenomenon of people would meet with me and they'd like go for it. Okay. And those who didn't go for it would never work with me. And so, again, it felt like what I was witnessing was that I was not in control of this, that my efforts had much smaller direct impact than I wanted them to, or that I had set out with my expectations. So, in fact, it started feeling like my clients came to me almost out of the blue. Like I'd be looking over here and heading down marketing or networking over here, and someone would come from the exact opposite side of my face, for example, you know, at me from the, and I'd be like, oh, how did you find me? And someone I did not know would have referred. I didn't recognize the name. I didn't recognize the business. They would have referred them. So again, this is very, very perplexing. And it really did make me feel like I needed to just, well, why bother? I mean, why do anything, right? I have a friend from law school who is also a law practice owner, and I remember talking to her, I think it was about year three or year four of her practice. I was just starting. I was in year one at that time. And she was like, yeah, I just get to my fuck it point. And she's like, and then all of a sudden, I do great. It's amazing. Clients want to work with me like crazy after my guys just say, fuck it. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if you engage me. I don't care if you like my work. I don't care if I market. I don't care anything. So I was like, wow, that's so ironic. Well, I ended up finding out the same thing. Now, the reason I'm teaching this class and have come to this understanding is because I don't want people to get to their fuck it moment. Like, it's not the attitude to have, right? But it indicates for us that point where we feel forced to let go of something, the point where we feel forced that pushes us to detachment. And that's why I say I came to this almost through force. I mean, out of complete necessity. And so that's why I'm telling you this very long story, is to give you the contours about how this can be a hard one and it's challenging. And I'll just say one more thing. The last factor that I ended up seeing, because I tried this approach too. I tried I'm going to set out my intention. And, you know, a lot of people, this is how I understand what is characterized as manifesting, and how I understand a lot of the law of attraction and manifesting practices that are, you know, now pretty commonly set out, at least in the online business world, and a lot of approaches that are, encouraged maybe or taught by, you know, what is sometimes called wealth consciousness, okay, where you set out your goal and you have that and you have your vision board and you have it and it's like you start with the end goal. And you figure out very, very, very clearly what that is, and you spend time meditating and focusing on it. And I did not succeed through this process either by setting out in terms of financially. Did not set out when I set out a client number engagement rate, or I set out a a monthly income revenue number, or a yearly goal, things started shutting down for me. So all of this seemed very, very counterintuitive to me. I mean, I was like, this is not the achievement and goal-oriented world that I am used to existing in and succeeding in very, very well up to the age of 35. So I concluded that, you know, while my efforts had some impact, right? In other words, I couldn't do nothing. I couldn't just do nothing and expect to have a business. There was not a direct causal relationship, okay, between what I did and the results that I got. There's sort of like all these in-between factors, and it came from, you know, my efforts went one way and the results came from a different direction. It's very perplexing. So there was not this causal relationship between what I did and how clients came to me, okay? And so this was drilled into me again and again and again by my experience, okay, by having applied what I understood to be the right, quote, doing the right things, marketing, content marketing, follow-up, consistency, setting out goals, you know, creating kind of interweaving my, I guess, certain common, quote, spiritual principles into money. I tried all of it, okay? And each experience drove the same thing home to me. Okay, there is not a causal relationship between my action and the result that I get. And that was a constant surprise, constant disappointment to me. And so much so that any anger, anything, any emotion that you can imagine feeling around that, I have felt or did feel. Okay? So nothing that I realized that nothing that I was doing or that I could do, you know, changed the fact that clients engaged me, that law clients engaged me when it was imperative for them, that it was seasonal, and that no client has ever engaged me based on a follow-up initiated by me. It completely flies in the face of all of the advice that I was ever given. Honestly, and when I set out to prepare for this class, when I looked at, you know, who is with me, who you guys are in this first year of this program, you know, all of you that are here, in what I got from you when I'm in speaking with you and in watching engagement in this program is that you demonstrated that you knew you needed it and wanted to be here. Okay, and the second factor was that we already had developed some kind of connection or relationship somehow through some other means. So again, it was kind of an indirect result in us working together in this way. So this indirect causal relationship, I have to do something, but I cannot expect it will bring about a particular result in a particular way by a particular time. That is what forced me to cultivate detachment. So thank you for bearing with me through my long story, but hopefully some of the contours resonate with you, or that you recognize yourself and you understand what I mean by being attached. So I have had to unhook effort or action from the expectation of a particular result. Okay, and this releasing expectation of result, not having an attachment to the result that you get, this is the very nature of surrender to Dharma. Okay, it's the very nature of the practices of yoga itself and the end goal of the practices of yoga themselves, and which is why it's a lifelong practice. So the Bhagavad Gita, which I have mentioned is the script that talks about Dharma, you know, sets this out quite emphatically, multiple chapters. as Stephen Cope, who wrote The Great Work of Your Life, which I recommend, it's a good, entertaining, fast read, explains it this way. A central fact of Dharma, it always involves the surrender of the self to the self, with a capital S. In the surrender, action and awareness merge, time disappears, and the work is no longer, quote, my work, but, quote, the work. The work becomes the path to God, the way of knowing the divine essence. And this is exactly what the Bhagavad Gita tells us. I'm looking for the page. Okay. Bhagavad Gita tells us directly, you have a right to your actions, but never to your actions' fruit. Action for the action's sake, act rather for the action's sake, and do not be attached to inaction. Self-possessed, resolute, act without any thought of result, open to success or failure, this equanimity is yoga. And it goes on to say, if you want to be truly free, perform all actions as worship. Right? Because that's our next question. If we're going to act, and we're not acting in order to get results, well, why are we acting? Well, Dharma would say, or the Bhagavad Gita would say about Dharma, everyone acts because it's our Dharma to act. We act in our own nature. We cannot do anything but act. And so then the answer to the detachment question is, well, can you act in the name of, can you act as an act of devotion? Can you act out of curiosity? Can you act for God or the universe or in accordance to your understanding of what is being asked of you? So detachment, right, is the very nature of surrender to your own Dharma. And detachment will bring every Dharma archetype into deeper understanding, deeper fulfillment, deeper spiritual growth, and deeper freedom. It's universal in that way. However, you know, for the purpose wisdom and freedom archetypes in particular, it is, I would argue, essential to your fulfillment and to any success on your own terms, because your aims are not money for money's sake. So your focus and your goals must be other than financial. Okay? They may have a financial result attached to them. You may ask, of course, you need to be supported in the world. But I'm talking again, like we did in the Dharma month, I'm talking about your focus, okay? How you act, meaning what attitude you bring toward acting. So I'd like to touch upon three things that are related to detachment, okay? These might be related to questions in your mind or not, but they are closely related to the practice of and the idea of detachment. And that is expectations. Okay, you heard me quote reading from my guru's book about expectations. And she has always taught us, anticipate everything, expect nothing. Okay, so I love that. Because it's when we expect something that we're disappointed. And what I love about this, what's so telling, is that when we expect something, we think we know the outcome, right? We think we know what's going to happen. And it's really very, very humbling that we're, one, not that powerful, but two, that our whole idea of what the outcome could be, like what the results could be for us, are really, really super limited. They're totally limited by our own experiences, by what we can see, by what we've been taught, and by what we somehow think is or is not possible. So while it can be very humbling to have the experience of saying, you know, of course I don't know what exactly is going to happen, what's even more humbling and amazing is when we witness that what we thought would happen, the goal we set out for ourselves, the way we thought something was going to unfold was so small, or so not right, or so less fulfilling than the way things actually happened. And that the possibilities are so much more infinite than we could ever conceive of. And the factors pouring into them are so beyond what we can see, right? Exampled by the fact that marketing might go in one direction, marketing and clients might come from somewhere else. I didn't know. We don't know what all of those factors are that are drawing people toward our work or how they will get to us. So often, I would say almost every time, our perceived or intended outcome for our actions is not the best, the highest, or the most expansive good for us and for all involved. Which leads me to a wonderful, you can call it a prayer, but a wonderful ask that I've heard, which is to simply ask, may the best and highest good happen for all involved. You know, may this unfold in a way that is the best for all involved. I love that simple, short invocation, so to speak. So expectations, we get stuck there. Second thing related to detachment that I want to touch upon is aversion. Now, aversion can seem like the opposite. It can be the opposite of attachment. We're either attached to something or we're averse to it. But my teacher, Swami Jayadevi, has taught us that attachment and aversion are actually two sides of the exact same ego coin. We either want something so badly we think that it is the end-all be-all, right? We need it. Or we don't want it. We don't even want to go near it. I mean, it can't possibly be good for us. There's this dance that we do here as entrepreneurs with success. This dance between attachment and aversion. Okay, we might do that dance with success. We might do that dance with visibility. We might do that dance with money. There might be a whole other slew of things that you know that you do that dance with where we're attached to it, achieving it, right? And yet somewhere we're often also averse to achieving it, averse to being it, averse to what we think it may mean if that happens, or if we experience that, or if we go in that direction. So just the very act of being business owners and embarking on this path, you create desire and aversion in us, sometimes simultaneously. And what we want is really, ideally, we don't want either of those. We don't want to be stuck in attachment, and we don't want to be stuck in aversion. We want to walk in that middle path, really to stand very clearly in the depth of who we are and be able to be in the moment to act from that place. Because that is really it. That is the path, and that is the work. To know who we are without waiver and to act because we know this is what we are here to do. And we're so lucky, really. Again, when I was thinking about this class last night, I thought, gosh, we're so lucky as business owners. We're so lucky entrepreneurship gives us ample opportunity to practice this, ample opportunity to practice seeing and coming up against where we're attached and where we're averse. And I actually have come to understand entrepreneurship as giving us, you know, this tremendous and unique opportunity to cut right to the vein of this. Because in a way, this path is asking us detach from any illusion of our own security or control. And that is wild, completely wild to the human experience. Now, I believe that all human experience is asking that of us. But I think that, you know, being entrepreneurs and having it tap into, you know, our work, which gives meaning, and our money, and all the ways in which we feel valuable and we feel secure, right? And then throwing in the, oh my God, I don't have control over this, okay? I do not have control at the level of I will take this action and I will have this result and therefore I will be okay. It's asking us to constantly go to the place of I am okay anyway. There's something bigger here at play. And I believe it constantly asks us to move into that flow, to surrender to the flow and the wisdom of our own Dharma. We're given this opportunity again and again and again, okay, to surrender. And you know what? There's bliss there. There's incredible bliss in that surrender, incredible peace. So this leads me to the how. Again, this is why we have the practices, because it is the most challenging thing that, you know, we undertake, detachment. So how can we begin to play with this? How can we begin to cultivate detachment or unconditional love or surrender? All of which are names for the same thing. But first, we talked about before, and that is simply, I am not the doer. Can we move into a space of, I am not the doer. I'm going to get out of the way and know that this isn't about me. So I am not the doer. First, simple tool. Two is the tool of really actively offering it up to the divine, offering it up to a wisdom that's greater than you, that a wisdom that has an understanding, that has a viewpoint, right, that has information even available to it that is bigger than you. And, you know, you can make up your own way of doing that. I tend to do it in meditation. Sometimes I ask out loud. I ask in my mind or I ask out loud. And one of the things I do is cup my hands and bow my head, right, and raise the cup hands kind of up to my forehead or my head and ask for it to be taken care of. And we'll even say I'm turning it over. So if you have an energy or a deity or an understanding of the divine, or even if you want to say, you know what, I'm stuck right now in my ego, I want to go into meditation to see if I can connect with my higher self, the capital S, and then ask it, say, okay, I'm handing this to you now. I'm done. I have taken this as far as I can take it. So I recommend, you know, overtly offering it up. And then the third practice is a practice that we'll do together this month. I actually have two. And they're both aimed at clearing out attachment and aversions. Okay, so they are energetic and vibrational tools for creating a clear space really around yourself. So we will do that. And the fourth is the practice of the Chittakosha, which is the detachment breath that I have taught you before. And so we'll do that today too. So let's move into doing our practice for the month. So if you have not or are not right now, come on into a comfortable seat. And just take a deep breath in. All right, let's take three breaths because I talked a lot. And then turning your palms up and slowly, consciously, on an inhale, drawing those palms together into your prayer pose. Taking an inhale here and exhaling. And then on your next inhale, drawing the palms up so that your prayer is rising up above your head. And on the exhale, open your palms wide. So now your hands and arms are in a V and wider than your shoulders. And bring your attention now to your left palm. Feel the energy in your left palm. And then on an inhale, draw that energy like an arc of fire from the left palm to the right palm. And on the exhale, let the energy go back. So you're drawing in from the left palm on the inhale to the right and exhaling from the right palm to the left. Imagining that there's an arc of protective fire above you, burning away any attachment, any aversion, anything that you don't need. And now dropping the elbows so that they're at shoulder height or a little bit lower. Forearms are still sticking straight up toward the ceiling. And turning the palms behind you. We're going to draw that fire arc now behind you, still inhaling from the left hand around behind you to the right, and exhaling from the right back around you like a shawl to the left. Doing that breath two more times, really draping, protecting the back of you like a shawl of fire. Burning away anything behind you. And now lowering the forearms so that they're parallel with the floor, turning the hands forward and then down toward the floor. We'll draw the breath again from the left to the right, this time drawing the energy of the fire arc beneath you, through the earth, underneath you and to the right hand, and exhaling in the same direction, back to the left hand, in an arc under you, drawing now that fire arc underneath you, burning away anything that you do not need. And creating a clear space, space of protection and power in its centeredness. And now turn the palms to face each other, keeping your hands still the same width apart, they're about knee width apart. And inhale from the left palm to the right, moving and exhale back again. Moving the energy between the palms. Feeling it build. And now inhaling, moving the palms together. And feeling the energy between the palms. You can move the palms back and forth, play with the energy. And as you're ready, drawing the hands together again. And taking a deep breath in. And a deep breath out. And that's the Kali fire arc. And take a moment to see how you feel now. And then the next practice that we'll be doing is we'll be returning to our Shiva mantra, Om Namah Shivaya. And the reason for that is that Om Namah Shivaya is really asking to be free, saying, please, unleash me, liberate me. That's the word I'm looking for, liberate me. So we will do that. Again, it is Om Namah Shivaya. Today we will just do 27, and then we'll move on to our Chittakross breath. You are welcome to do a full round of 108 in the morning, and I will provide the recording again of 108 repetitions. Taking a preparatory breath in and exhaling. And then inhale to begin. Om Namah Shivaya. 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 Breathing the silence in. Releasing the breath. And drawing the silence now on the breath straight into the heart chakra. And exhaling the breath up and out the top of the head. And two more breaths like this, inhaling to the heart. And exhaling. Last breath. Exhaling the breath up and out the top of the head, way up over the head. And settling your awareness now just over the head. Taking soft breaths in this space. And this is the space of the Chittakosh, the space of detachment, the space of unconditional love. It is also the space where all things are remembered. And now on the next inhale, drawing your awareness and your breath down back into the body, coming to the heart center, and exhaling, allowing the breath to dissolve around the heart. Circling your hands to prayer if they're not there. And inhaling, the hands up above the head, stretching, stretching, releasing the hands, stretching up. Taking a big breath in and exhaling. Releasing your hands. And rub your palms together. And place your palms over your eyes, blinking. And release your hands. So, those are our practices for this month, the Kali Fire Arc, Om Namah Shivaya, and the Chittakosh, or detachment breath. I will provide you with a recording of each separately, in case you just want to touch your toe in and do one each day, totally fine. And then a recording of all three together. So that you can do that if you'd like to do that. Okay, so with that, take a minute, come back on into your body and back to the call. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer any questions. Press star 6 because I did have the line muted. Okay, I'm going to circle through the mute settings here just to make sure that there wasn't a technical problem. Okay, everybody's unmuted, so if there are questions.
Rebecca, I have a question. It's Anne.
Sure.
You talk about being detached and from the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting thing for me to think about in my work. There are certain ways I get it, you know, like I can put my head around the detachment of any marketing efforts or, you know, that kind of thing. But when it comes to my work itself, that's different. What I do through the whole process, there are times when things happen out of my control and I do have to let go. But if I'm not connected to the outcome, then how do I do my best work in terms of the actual architecture, like the actual built outcome? Like, what do you think about that?
Well, I actually think that, and this is coming from the point of view of being an artist, okay, not being an architect specifically, but being an artist, I actually would think that the work that you do is perfect for detachment, because what the detachment does is it allows you to show up, and just all you need to do is show up and the work comes through you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would understand detachment.
Okay.
Does that make a difference for you? You can say, tell me more about where you think
there's
attachment or there's not attachment.
It makes good sense as I think about the act of the beginning phases. What happens often is that I get what I get on paper, and then it leaves my control into the contractor's hands. And sometimes I feel like I really have to fight to get the result that I expect or that my client expects. Otherwise, the contractor will water it down or not, you know, so.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from that. So I would ask you the question of, because attachment is really about, you know, it's about where we get stuck, where that like tightening starts to happen, right? Where we're like, oh my God, I can feel myself with my entire body, like white knuckling it.
Right.
Okay, so what I'm saying to you in that is that there can be instances where you know obviously it's architecture. All of us have results that come out of our work. Like there have to be deliverables, right? I don't mean that there's no result. So you know that there has to be a result, and you know what has been set out or what the plan has been, right?
Right.
So is there any place in that process where you feel like you get really tight about it, or do you feel like, you know what, this is okay. Like, I know I need to take these steps. I'm taking them. I know the contractors can be challenging. I show up for that. Because I don't know that advocating or fighting for the project for your client is necessarily attachment in every instance.
Mm.
It's subtle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like me in my lawyer role negotiating a contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow. I mean, it's not the same. There's not a physical product that comes out of it. But I have to show up, and I have to know what result is acceptable and what is not, right? And I have to advocate, fight sometimes by not backing down for what is acceptable and not accept what is not acceptable. And at the same time, I have to know that I, in some ways, have no control, actually in every way, have no control over what those two parties are going to actually do, whether they are mm-hmm. actually going to come to a satisfactory agreement through negotiation or not.
Mm-hmm.
I have no control over whether that other attorney or other person on the other side is going, how they're going to behave. I have no control over whether or not, once the agreement comes into play, that it's going to be upheld. But I do have control over whether or not I'm willing to stand up and fight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't know. Does that make it any clearer?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I would see it as this. You owe your client a responsibility, right? I mean, you owe your client a responsibility to do what is in your power to to create what is expected. There we go with the expectations. But, no, to carry out the project as you've discussed, right? Because that's what you were hired for. And at the same time, there are absolutely places where you do not have control over that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that you don't have that doesn't mean that you don't do the work of making the call or follow up with the contractor or whatever that has to happen.
Yeah, I guess sometimes what really comes into play is my ego and my desire for my work to be a reflection of my capabilities, talents,
mm-hmm.
it's building my portfolio. It's that, I guess, where I get
so that's the right. So that's the attachment. The mm-hmm. attachment is not there has to be a building finished, right? Or there has to be a redesign finished. The attachment is, if this doesn't go I don't know. I'm characterizing. I'm paraphrasing you, so forgive me if this isn't accurate. But what I'm hearing is that the attachment is, oh my God, this is a reflection of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm attached to that being exactly what I think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that you don't have any control over what the reflection of your work is to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you go in and you look at a piece of art, three different people, five different people are looking at it, and they all see it differently, and they all have some level of appreciation or like or dislike for it.
But does
all
it,
of us are
is
in
it,
that boat.
Yeah, but is it wrong to want people to like it? Why else do I do my work?
Why do you do your work?
Well, to I do my work to enhance people's environments and to make mm-hmm. them beautiful. And if they're not deemed beautiful, then I mean, is that not a measure of success? That's I get, yeah.
Okay, so there's a way of understanding, like when you say, you know, people liking your work, okay, that's very broad. So there's a way in which, you know, there are different grades of that. There's, okay, I want my clients to be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I want to feel like I showed up and created a beautiful space. I want to be proud of that. I want my client to be satisfied. And then there's you, and then there's the client, right? And those are like the closest relationships to this work. And then mm-hmm. there's other kind of circles outside of that.
Right.
And so, you know, I would say actually, you know, the closer you are in to the work with the people with the closest relationship to the work, I would say in the extreme, yes, as a spiritual practice, you probably need to detach from that eventually too. Not because mm-hmm. you don't care, but just in a matter of like, okay, how do I infuse my work with as much presence and love and joy and beauty and commitment as I can. And
right.
can I trust, yeah, I think maybe the question is, can I trust that if I do that, that the result may well exceed all of my expectations?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's actually the key might be to flip the question, again, to flip the focus, to say, all right, if I pour myself into this work, right, if I give all of it, to all of myself to it, not, and I don't mean Anne in a way that's going to run you over, okay? that's not what
right.
I mean, if I show up with as much presence and expertise and beauty and love and care and commitment as I can, every time, you know, one of the questions is even like, do I even know what that yields? Have I experienced,
mm-hmm.
I'm not making a judgment, I'm just, for myself, I would ask this question too. Do I even know what that experience yields?
Mm-hmm.
So many of us don't, because the fear of the result, right, the attachment to the result, the anxiety about the result not being good enough gets in the way of us actually treating our work that way.
Right. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Great. Good.
Thank you. And I hate to run. I have
yeah, go ahead.
You're waiting for me.
Okay.
This has been really, really good, helpful. And
good.
I look forward to focusing on this for the next month.
Excellent. I look forward to hearing
yes.
what comes. Yeah.
Okay,
have a great
thank
day.
You, thank you. Okay,
bye.
You too. Bye.
Julie, are you here? Okay, you had to go too. Thank you, everyone. I'll speak with you soon. Bye-bye.